Of course, I hail from the Midwest, Randy, Detroit and St. Louis, so we're in Tornado Alley, and we get them every spring. Any strange tornado stories beyond the cow flying through the air?
Well, actually, there are a lot of those kind of things. One of the things that's always interesting about trying to find these stories is to determine how much is truth and how much is fiction. And for example, when you're looking at cows or horses that are being carried up by a tornado and landing safely, how much can you believe that particular report? So a lot of times what I've tried to do is go back and contact these people, track them down, find out their names and such. And there was a story back in the 1950s of this girl. She was only 8 years old at the time. She was in South Dakota. And she was riding home from school on her horse, and a tornado came through, picked her up, carried her over 1,000 yards, over three fences, as a matter of fact, and actually set her down safely, and the horse as well. And I thought, well, that's just unbelievable. Well, I did a little investigation, talked to some weather meteorologists that were on TV in South Dakota, actually tracked down this woman. She's now in her 50s, and she's alive, survived it, told me about the incident, and actually even sent me a picture of her on that horse back in the 1950s. So as much as possible, we always try to want to verify to see if these things can actually happen.
Any idea how high she went?
Well, of course, I have a feeling she was probably concerned about more things than trying to figure out how high she was. But in some cases, we've had people that have been lifted over two- or three-story buildings and landed on the other side. So we know that they can definitely be carried quite a distance.
The power of tornadoes. What happens, Randy? Do they get caught in the spinning, the vortex of it?
Right, and see, that's the possibility of how they could survive, is that these winds in a tornado are so incredibly strong, but only in a very limited space. And so you might get shot up and spun just enough to move you, but then hit an area of weaker winds and be more carefully dropped so that you could survive something like that. I think it's the abrupt changes in wind speed that are associated with a tornado that could, on rare occasions, allow somebody to survive.
We have a guest by the name of Danyon Brinkley, who has clinically died a couple times, having been hit by lightning. That's got to be a situation that I hope I never find myself in.
Yeah, and actually, it is a quite profound experience, even if you don't clinically die but are just hit and knocked unconscious or suffer some other damage. One of the major problems that we find with lightning victims is the psychological damage that is done to them afterwards. That one of my good friends, who's a leading lightning medical doctor, has put together a lightning survivors group that really tries to help each other get over some of the traumas that are associated with being struck by lightning.
Have you ever heard of anybody getting hit by these plasma balls of light? Have you heard of those?
Well, I mean, probably the closest thing that is related to that would be balls of lightning or these kind of glowing spheres of discharge that are usually associated with some kind of a thunderstorm. The problem is that we frankly don't know what they are. As you said, one theory is that they might be plasma. Just recently, some Israeli scientists were able to recreate something in the lab that they said might be ball lightning. But because ball lightning occurs so rarely, we have anecdotal accounts of it. We have personal stories of people that have survived or seen ball lightning. But it happens so rarely, we cannot yet figure out precisely what it is. We can't recreate it in the lab and know for sure that, oh yeah, what's in the lab is actually what we see out in the real world.
Will it char you if you got hit by one?
It can. Actually, believe it or not, most times when people are struck by lightning, there's no immediate physical damage. That lightning, when it strikes you, actually doesn't go through you very often. It goes around you. And consequently, the biggest problem that we have when somebody is struck by lightning is cardiac arrest. As you said, you know, you can be clinically dead.
Sure.
Because your heart actually stops beating. One common misperception is that if somebody's been struck by lightning, you don't want to touch them because they're electric charged. Well, that's nonsense. They are not charged, and if you start applying CPR immediately, there's a darn good chance that you can actually revive somebody from a lightning strike.
Randy, if you're talking to somebody on a landline in your house, you know, the old phones, and there's lightning outside, is that dangerous? Because I've always heard these rumors that if lightning hit, it could go through the line and go right into your ear, into your head. Is that true?
Well, I can tell you a personal story. I grew up in a little town in Nebraska, and we were out in a rural area. We had a landline, and the lightning hit the telephone pole right outside our house. The charge went through the line, and our wall phone literally exploded
into
thousands of little molten pieces. Now, luckily, none of us were on the phone at the time, but we heard this loud bang out in our living room, ran out, and our living room floor was just covered with little bits of phone. So had somebody been talking, they would not have survived that.
So word to the wise, when it's lightning out and you're on a phone like that, hang up, huh?
Yeah, exactly. Now, as you said, that's a landline. If you're on a cell phone, it's actually okay, because the idea is the charge does not easily travel through air. So a cell phone's a relatively safe thing to use during a lightning storm.
I remember a couple of years ago, I was stuck in a hailstorm, and I got to tell you, they were as big as golf balls, and I was able to quickly get my car under some shelter. In the next day, insurance companies set up sections and parking lots where people just drove their car in, and they were just writing them checks, Randy. It was just amazing. Hail is getting bigger, not smaller. Why?
Well, one thing, again, is we have more people out to observe it. So, you know, if hail hits an isolated field where nobody is at, nobody's going to be able to say, oh, this is a hailstone of a certain size. When you have a lot more people that are living in areas that are hit by hail, there's more likely a chance that somebody can pick one up and say, oh, this is the record hailstone. But given that, you're right, that within just the last couple years, we set an all-time record for the United States in terms of the size of a hailstone. Believe it or not, it was something on the order of 17 inches around. I'd hate to have been underneath of that when it actually hit. But it was a little town in Aurora, Nebraska.
And let me ask you this. Why don't we have more huge ice chunks falling on us? Why doesn't that happen?
Well, you know, first of all, the hailstone is the result of, if you will, of a roller coaster ride through a thunderstorm, that you start out with a little ice crystal, and as it is going up and down through a thunderstorm because of the updrafts and the downdrafts, each time through, it's picking up more ice as more ice collects.
I see.
And actually, it's kind of interesting. If you cut a hailstone in half, very often what you will see is rings that are indicating these passages through different layers of the atmosphere, and you can literally kind of see the age, if you will, of a hailstone by the rings that you see when you cut a hailstone open.